Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Bucks podcast coming at you once again. I've got Matt Velasquez of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel with me. We're going to chat with him about the last few Bucks games. Milwaukee 20-9 heading into a game against the Pelicans on Wednesday night at Fiserv Forum. Matt, you've been out on the road quite a bit. How has the road treated you? Are you no less worse for wear? How are you doing?
You know, I think I'm doing okay. A little bit of a cold maybe coming on, trying to nip that in the bud. But other than that, I think the road has been pretty nice to me so far.
Bucks have won two of the three road games since we last chatted. Most recently, a Monday night victory and kind of a close call in Detroit over the Detroit Pistons. Couple three pointers at the end of regulation could have forced overtime from Blake Griffin, but they were short. 107-104. The Bucks win. Let's start with that game against Detroit. A whole lot of Giannis, which is sort of the main ingredient to every good Bucks performance, pretty much. But I want to start with some of the role players who are getting a lot more run than they had been. That being DJ Wilson and Sterling Brown. We talked quite a bit about Sterling Brown and kind of what he brought to the table where we've seen his production and his minutes increase over the last few weeks. But DJ Wilson was out there crunch time. I mean, he is the guy defending these 3-point shots by Blake Griffin. I think there are a lot of Bucks fans that sort of very early said DJ Wilson probably isn't going to amount to much because we didn't really see him as a rookie. And obviously that was premature, but still, like, it isn't hard to see why Bucks fans would already be down on this guy. And now we're starting to see in an environment where there are a lot of players who could be competing for that playing time, he's out there on the floor. So what did you think about having more from DJ Wilson?
Yeah, I mean, it was only a slight surprise to see him come into the game. I mean, with Ersan Ilyasova out, he suffered a nose contusion during practice over the weekend, and so he wasn't with the team. That leaves them a little bit slim in the kind of power forward, you know, just general forward rotation. And so when Giannis picked up two fouls in the first 3 minutes, I mean, Bud looked on the bench and he grabbed DJ and said, all right, it's going to be you. And I suspect DJ would have been in the rotation to some extent regardless, considering, you know, that Ilyasova was out and that's where he was going to go with the backup four. You know, but you really don't know. At that point, the Bucks, I think they were down like 10-2. They got off to a little bit of a slow start. Giannis is in foul trouble. You know, they've already kind of broken glass in case of emergency by grabbing DJ Wilson, who to that point in his career had played all of 90 minutes over two seasons.
I love that analogy, breaking glass in case of, that's just fantastic.
I mean, it was early.
If you look at his hair, it's kind of like an axe that you would see in one of those glass cases, actually.
Sure. And so, you know, you kind of have, you know, DJ Wilson coming out there, unproven, you know, generally untested, at least at the NBA level, in just 90 minutes over, you know, I think it's probably like 25 games or 24 games in two seasons. He missed a lot of this year with a right hamstring issue. And so you never know what you're going to find. And immediately he gets put onto Blake Griffin. Griffin and the Pistons do what you expect, which is immediately attack the new guy. And DJ held his own. Like, he was able to use his physicality to stay with Griffin. He, you know, blocked a shot at one point in the game, you know, allowed the help defense to come without over exerting himself, without reaching in, without committing silly fouls. Bud praised him after the game for kind of trying to work hard to try to deny entry passes and do his work early. And then lo and behold, you know, the Bucks go on a little bit of a run. You know, take a 1-point lead quickly. You know, there are a bunch of 3-pointers in there. You know, Middleton had two, Tony Snell had one. Then DJ adds a 3-pointer of his own, and you kind of look at it and you go, okay, like this guy, you know, he's playing, he's contributing, like he's doing some stuff. And then as he got, you know, continually called upon during the game, you know, Giannis came back, and then DJ switched back. In the second half, Giannis was fine. You know, he didn't pick up any more fouls during the rest of the first half, so going into the second half with two fouls is no big deal. So he was able to play more. But then DJ was able to be out there in the fourth quarter at crunch time. You know, he had a kind of a little fake alley-oop type thing with Bledsoe where Bledsoe just tossed it up. DJ caught it, popped it in. You know, not really a layup or a dunk, just kind of a little, you know, 4-foot shot or whatever it was. And then with the game on the line, with the Bucks up by three with 14.4 seconds left, you know, Bud decided to go with the lineup that included Giannis, Middleton, Bledsoe, Sterling Brown, and DJ Wilson. You know, one of those things is not like the others.
Yes, and, that's true.
And DJ, you know, ended up being the guy, you know, Bud said he wanted to have a lineup with versatility, with guys who could switch and who could defend the three and had quickness and all this stuff. And, you know, DJ ended up contesting the first Griffin three. Jose Calderon gets a rebound. Griffin gets it again from 27 feet. And again, it's DJ, you know, putting a hand up, trying to contest as best he can. And both shots missed. So that was easily, by any metric, was DJ's best game in a Milwaukee Bucks uniform. Career high 9 points, 4 of 5 shooting for the season. I mean, he's actually 9 of 12 from the field, including, you know, 4 of 6 on threes, which very small sample sizes, you know, and two of those games were kind of just in cleanup minutes and smaller run. But, you know, a career high 25 minutes on Monday night, a lot of meaningful minutes, a lot of meaningful opportunities. And, you know, after the game, you know, Bud mentioned, like, hey, I've been saying since September that I think this guy's been really good and has been progressing, and it's nice to have him healthy and be able to show it, you know, because that's what we've been hearing. You know, I wrote about, you know, DJ prior to the season a couple times. And, you know, Giannis was saying, oh, man, like, he's definitely taking a step forward. Like, I keep pushing him. Like, you can see how hard he's working. You know, Eric Bledsoe has praised him for how much better he's gotten and how big of a step he's taken from his rookie year till now. You know, DJ has a pretty high level of confidence in himself and his game and in the work that he's put in. You know, while there's been a lot of noise and a lot of, you know, kind of doubt about his skills, especially when the Bucks went ahead and picked up his option for next year, you know, he kind of just continued to stay focused on what he's been doing and the work he's been doing. You know, Mike Budenholzer and his staff's daily vitamins that he's been partaking in and working on his game. And, you know, he believes that he fits into Bud's system. Bud believes that DJ fits into his system. And, you know, if he's going to play like he did on Monday night, then I think it's pretty easy to see, you know, how he could fit as a role player and somebody who's willing to, you know, put in the work on defense against a 5-time All-Star. So all around, just a really solid performance from DJ Wilson.
I'm a big college basketball guy, and I often wonder what that Michigan team would have been like last year if Wilson were still on it, because they went to the national championship game, and he obviously still could have been in college. And when he came out, a little bit of a project. But the Bucks obviously starting to get some rewards there. Malcolm Brogdon is a guy who had no college eligibility left when he, of course, left Virginia. And he's been injured now. Last couple games, when he sat out the Cleveland game, I admit I assumed it was one of those hurt because they're playing the Cavaliers and can afford to rest a guy maneuver. Chris Middleton missing that game as well. Bucks, of course, won anyway because Cleveland, holy smokes, not very good this season, the Cleveland Cavaliers. But Brogdon out again on Monday night against the Pistons. What's the long-term prognosis there? Are the Bucks going to be without him for a while? And you wrote about the guard rotation, how tough it is to get guards minutes right now that they have George Hill. I mean, maybe this is the type of thing they can afford to be extra, extra cautious, because, hey, they got all kinds of guys that can play that spot.
Yeah, they're really being extra cautious. The phrase that Bud used in pregame on Monday night was aggressively cautious, because this doesn't seem like it's that big of a deal. I know that on Friday night in Cleveland, before the game, I went to the Bucks locker room and I talked to Malcolm, and I was just like, Hey Malcolm, what's the situation with your leg? He's like, oh, I'm fine. And I was like, really? Like, you know, is this something that you did in a game or did in a practice, or, you know, what happened? And he was like, no, it really wasn't like a certain one moment that anything happened. It's just a little sore, and it's really not that big a deal. Like, he was just like, I think he was like serving himself food at the time that he was like talking to me. He was not worried about it in the slightest. But I think it's a situation where he probably could have played against the Pistons. I think if this was like a playoff game or some more important regular season game, like maybe he would have. At least that's the sense that I get. But if you have a situation where you have plenty of guys who can play in his place and you are really focused on long-term health and you want Malcolm to be available for those bigger games down the road, and you don't want this to turn into a bigger problem, then you do what the Bucks did. And you say, hey, if you're not 100%, if you're not totally ready, if you're still feeling any lingering effects, then just rest. Like, we'll be fine. Like, you get 100% healthy, and we'll go from there. You know, and Bud, you know, he said, hey, we decided we'll give him an extra day or two or whatever he's ready. You know, it seemed like, you know, the initial way he was going was just saying, yeah, I'll just give him a couple extra days. Yeah, but he wanted to take that back and didn't want to promise anything. But I expect that Malcolm will be okay. And you know, as a team, you're right. Like, they do have a lot of guard depth. I mean, they've got an excess of guys they can play. I mean, Pat Connaughton didn't even play last night in Detroit. And he's somebody who's been a regular part of the rotation. And granted, he's been in a little bit of a slump recently. Had three balls not really falling for him. I think Sterling Brown is a pretty big reason why Pat isn't necessarily doing as much, just because Sterling is bringing so much on the defensive end. And he's making corner threes, especially at a high rate. And so you're gonna give those minutes to him. But you know, when you have a Pat Connaughton who we've seen do as many things as he's done, especially during that West Coast trip when he was a really big part of the rotation and helped a lot against the Warriors. When you have somebody like that who you can just decide, oh, okay, you know, DNP CD, like, coach's decision, like, it's okay, and you still win, and you have the, you know, kind of the horses to, you know, to make up for it. I mean, that's a really good position to be in. And you still have George Hill, who, I mean, Monday night was 0-6 from the field. He missed a couple of layups, just didn't seem to be able to get in a rhythm, played about 14 minutes. You know, he's still getting used to where his spots are, you know, what he needs to do, how he best integrates with the team. So there's a lot of that, you know, you still need to figure out. But they definitely have the guys to make up for an absence. Not that you want Malcolm to be out for any stretch of time, but if he is going to be, or if anyone else, you know, falls prey to the injury bug, that you definitely have, you know, people to make up for that.
It's going to be really difficult for my Pat Connaughton for Sixth Man of the Year award campaign if he doesn't get off the bench, Matt. What, we got to do something about this.
Well, you know, he's got to start, you know, making the most of his opportunities, because you look at what he's done so far this year. I mean, 29.3% on threes and shooting 3.6 a game. So you're shooting almost, you know, like 3.5 three-pointers a game, and you're only making 29% of them. That's just not going to do it. And obviously you can't up that percentage without getting out there and actually making some. And he is a, you know, a career, you know, prior to the season, he was a career like 35% three-point shooter, or 36.4. So 36.4 before the season. So you know that he has that ability in him. But, you know, he's going to need to kind of hone in on the right spots for him. He's in a lot of catch and shoots, a couple feet beyond the line, a lot from the kind of the wings. You know, just figure out, like, Sterling Brown knows, like, that the corner is his spot. He's always leaking out to the corner. He's staying in the corner. He's trusting his teammates that when they have drives, that they'll get him the ball if they get into trouble. And, you know, by and large, they've done that. I feel like, you know, this is kind of anecdotal, I haven't checked it out, but I feel like a lot of Connaughton's threes are above the break. They're not those corner threes. And he hasn't had, you know, a high level of success on his 3-point shooting this year. So maybe he just needs to, you know, kind of refocus, figure out where his spots are and how he can be most effective. And he'll definitely get opportunities. I mean, he's, yeah, everybody is. I mean, it's been this kind of, like, you know, wheel of Budenholzer the past few games with the guard rotation that, you know, just Friday against Cleveland, Sterling Brown didn't play at all. And Jalen Morris got some run. And it's just a coach's decision, and just kind of Bud giving guys chances and seeing what he has. And so Pat will definitely get more opportunities, and we'll see what he's able to do with those.
This is our best podcast of the year in terms of expressions that we've used. Wheel of Budenholzer, the latest that seems like a good graphics opportunity that we can parlay into some content at jsonline.com down the road. I love it. One of the reasons that the Bucks beat the Cavaliers, maybe the primary reason, was the easy money of Giannis. He was awesome. 44 points, ties his career high, 14 rebounds, 8 assists. He was completely unguardable. Nobody on Cleveland had an answer for him. But if you're looking for something to be concerned about, it's that he played 38 minutes in a game that the Bucks mostly had in hand. Again, they were missing Middleton and Brogdon. They did have a period late in the game where they had to sort of hold off a Cleveland push, but the Bucks win that one 114-102. I don't think Cleveland is ever going to, or teams like Cleveland are ever going to stop the Bucks if Giannis is on. You know, we haven't actually talked a lot directly about Giannis this year. He's sort of that thing that goes without saying, but he has that, you know, that 44-point output, and then on Monday night against Pistons, he scores another 32 with 12 boards, 5 assists. Where would you say that he has gotten better this year? And maybe he hasn't necessarily. Maybe he's just being appreciated more because the Bucks are a more complete team and Giannis is this X factor with this additional spacing absolutely going to work. But are there areas that he's improved? You always hear about his shot, how that could get better. And I'm starting to wonder if it needs to get better because he is putting up massive production. And even though he's not a sniper outside of that, outside of the paint by any means, he's still doing incredible things.
Yeah, well, I think that the shot and finding his spots, you know, from the mid-range or, you know, some spot around the three-point line where he can shoot with some consistency, because right now he has nothing from the three-point line, really. But just finding those spots is going to help because, you know, we saw in the game against the Pacers last week, teams are going to show him a wall, and they're going to double him and triple him and just swarm him and make life really hard. Like they did in that game, a season low 12 points, season low 7 field goal attempts. I mean, they're going to frustrate the heck out of him, especially if he's kicking out to shooters and they're not making shots. That was the confluence of events at Bankers Life Fieldhouse last week, where he couldn't get any shots up. He wasn't getting as many foul calls as he thought he should. You know, he was getting swarmed and shut down. And when he made the right play, was to, when you are doubled or tripled, to kick out to someone who's wide open. When he was doing that, guys didn't make shots. And when, you know, and that's just draining for everyone. Not just him, but the whole team is getting frustrated when, you know, guys aren't making their open looks. You know, Giannis can't really bail them out with just clean drives to the hoop. Just the offense isn't working. And so, you know, in the playoffs and in big regular season games, like, teams are going to do that same thing. You know, we saw the Golden State Warriors do that when they came to Fiserv Forum. So he's going to need to be able to find spots where he can affect the game in either one-on-one or ISO situations, or where they can move the ball around to get him opportunities. I think one thing they did well in crunch time of their game on Monday against the Pistons was, you know, they're up by one with about 3 minutes left, and you know they're going to try and get the ball to Giannis. But they didn't just, you know, feed him in the post, have him do ISOs and go to work. They got him the ball in transition. They got him the ball off of screens where he can catch it in stride, and there's not time for that double team. You know, they got him the ball off an offensive rebound. So you need to find these different ways that, yes, if you just want him to pound away and get to the restricted area for dunks and layups, like, you're going to have to do some things to make that happen. You can't just do these like stagnant ISOs because all he's going to see is bodies. So they're going to have to work with that, and they know that. But as you mentioned, when they're playing the Cavaliers, I mean, Cleveland's centers are decimated. Tristan Thompson was out. John Henson is obviously out for the foreseeable future until after the All-Star break. And so they just don't have enough guys to throw at him. And, you know, he basically looked at anyone they put on him, whether it was Channing Frye or Larry Nance Jr. or whatever, and just thought, "Yeah, I can get by that guy," like, and he did. So it was generally a really good night. And one thing that I wanted to point out, I just tallied it up. You mentioned Giannis playing 37 and a half minutes last night. So at this point in the season, 29 games in to the Bucks season, he's played in 27. He has played more than that. Just 5 times, like, more minutes wise. Last year, at this point in the season, he had played 19 games of 38 minutes or more.
Oof!
So,
wow.
So that is a big change, just in his ability to rest. I mean, obviously, he means a lot to the team. He has a high usage. He, obviously affects their plus minus in big ways when he's on the court versus when he's off the court. And last year, they did not have enough depth. They didn't have enough scoring, especially on defense. They couldn't stop people when he was out of the game. And now, you know, as you can tell by their record being 29 at this point, that they can give him some time off. They can blow teams out and take their foot off the throttle and bring in a bench unit and get him a bunch of rest. I mean, they've had, you know, just kind of count here, like 7 games where they've won by double digits and he's played, you know, 30 or fewer minutes. Like, that just wasn't something they did. And so being able to get him that rest and let him, you know, generally recuperate and not put all those miles on him is definitely going to pay dividends down the road when, you know, March and April and May get here and he doesn't have all those miles on his body.
Yeah, he's missed 2 games entirely with one with injury, one with rest. Bucks won both of those games, so they're picking those spots seem to be picked properly as well.
Well, and they won both of them by double digits, one by 15 and one by 16.
Right, incredible. And we talked about Wilson and Sterling Brown at the outset. Like, the bench is so deep now where there's so many guys that you can rely on in big spots. And certainly, like you said, they can bring those in. You were talking about some sets. There was one set, one that comes to mind is the win at Toronto out of bounds to get Giannis a wide-open dunk that was crucial late. But, man, there was a pretty one at the end of that Detroit game that got Giannis a wide-open dunk. You could see it developing. It was a thing of beauty, and it was certainly big as that came down to one possession. We'll look ahead here at the Christmas schedule a little bit. I wanted to do just a quick little rapid fire for you. A couple comments or a couple smaller items that I wanted to get your thought on. We saw the thing against Detroit, made famous by Andrew Rousey at Marquette, when Eric Bledsoe leaned into a jumping defender for a 3-point shot. He missed all 3 free throws, sadly. How nostalgic were you for Marquette basketball? Formerly the Marquette beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, how nostalgic were you at that moment in time?
Yeah, no, that was a veritable thing. Like, as opposed to, I know Chris Middleton gets fouled on threes a lot, but he does it in a way where he is going up for the shot and he is able to get his arm hit or is able to draw contact, you know, with his feet when he lands. Like, he does it totally differently. But the Andrew Rousey hashtag the thing, you know, was basically he just pump fake and get guys in the air and be like, all right, you're in the air, I'm gonna jump now and just draw the contact. And I remember there was one against, I think it was Providence, that he drew the contact. And he's a right-handed shooter, and he switched hands to his left hand and chucked it up and made it and got the 4-point play, which was just nonsense. Just seeing that, there was definitely some nostalgia. I think, you know, it was kind of almost unfathomable at that point. I think the Bucks were up by 1. The Bledsoe would miss all the free throws, like all 3. It just seemed like, I know a lot of arenas, they have like a giveaway the fourth quarter, but an opposing player misses 2 free throws, you get some kind of food item from a local sponsor. But I feel like if there was ever a sponsorship for like a 3 straight missed free throws by 1 player, like, that would have to be a substantially better prize, because like, that's just so rare.
There's no way. Everyone in that arena should not have walked out with a Little Caesars pizza. It's very upsetting that wasn't thought about.
Yeah, or at least some crazy bread or something. I had my fair share of crazy bread last night, because the media food there, they have like a whole dinner spread. And then in addition to the dinner spread, they have Little Caesars pizza, crazy bread, chicken tenders, a whole bunch of other stuff. And they have a whole self-serve ice cream sundae bar. Detroit, if you ever have a chance to go there, JR, to cover a game, the media food is fantastic. It's one of the best. It's one of the best in the NBA.
I'd like to say that grosses me out, but it does not. I am very intrigued by that possibility. Next thing in our lightning round, we saw the earned edition jerseys. I don't know what that means. We talked about the city edition jerseys. There's now the earned edition jerseys for the Bucks, much more spare looking. We'll see those on Christmas Day, I believe, when the Bucks go to Madison Square Garden to face the Knicks. I don't know why we need 50 jerseys, but I guess I'm curious to know what you think of these earned editions. We'll call them the Ernies for short. I still don't know what that means, but we're going to nickname it anyway.
So I can explain it. The earned edition is a jersey that teams that made the playoffs last year are like awarded or like able to wear.
Oh, they earned them. I get it.
Yeah. So they get to wear those. The Bucks is the same design as their city edition jerseys, but it's a different color palette. It's not taking from the Mecca floor. It's taking from the jerseys that they wore. I think it was like late 70s into the 90s, where you have the green and red stripes, which I think I didn't even consider this till yesterday, but those are Christmas colors. So they'll be wearing Christmas colored jerseys. You know, it's mostly white with some gray. The gray is very subtle. You know, they have the vertical Bucks word mark on the front. They got the green and red striping. I mean, I think they look pretty clean. I think they are well executed, aesthetically pleasing. I think they're definitely more visually appealing than the City Edition jerseys, which, you know, that yellow isn't for everyone. You know, I think those are fine. I'm not one to like have like hugely negative opinions on jerseys. I think they're either like, oh, that's good, or like, eh, and like that's as far as I'll go. But these ones I think do look good. I think they'll play well on TV. And like I said, the fact that they are Christmas colors and the Bucks are playing on Christmas, that there's some nice synergy there. And then fans will get a chance to see them during the week after Christmas as they come home to Fiserv Forum, because they'll be wearing them all, 3 games in a row against the Knicks, the Nets, and the Pistons during their, I believe, 6-game homestand coming after Christmas.
All right, last rapid fire thought here. We're not going to have a podcast next week over the holidays here, so you're not going to hear our lovely voices for a little bit. But the Bucks, like we said, they're going to be playing on Christmas. They've got a pretty interesting schedule going forward. As we now kind of head toward the 2019 portion of the schedule, what is one thing that has surprised you this year about the Bucks team, and one thing that still concerns you? I mean, they've accomplished pretty much everything you could ask for in terms of teams they've beaten, and they've showed very well. They've showed that they're one of the best teams in the NBA. But what is one thing that really jumps out at you that you didn't see coming, and one thing that might still hold them back from being one of the best teams in the NBA?
Well, I just think it's been impressive how quickly they've taken the Mike Budenholzer system. You know, obviously they had a roster construction that they believed could fit what he wants to do, and they brought in floor spacers and 3-point shooters and Brook Lopez, who, you know, obviously has been, you know, shooting really well from 3-point range, and then, you know, on Monday night against the Pistons had 5 blocks, which I guess it's weird to say it was surprising to see a 7-foot guy with 5 blocks. But just the energy and the way that he attacked defensively and he closed out, and the way that he helped and was everywhere he needed to be. I mean, all of that was impressive. But just as a team, like they've all bought in. You know, there have been little blips. You know, obviously last week after the Pacers game, Giannis was frustrated with not being able to find a rhythm and passing the ball and not getting it back, and, you know, just having an overall tough night. And Chris Middleton went through a slump, and he was trying to figure out how to get out of that, you know, while not reverting to his old habits, especially going to the mid-range for shots. But, you know, he had 22 points against the Pistons and hit a couple threes and really seemed to bounce back, and it looked more like himself. So those have been positives. But overall, you know, they've taken to the system. They believe in the system. The system has worked. The system has developed, you know, role players where, you know, as we talked about a bunch of the podcast today, like, you know, Dante DiVincenzo started the season as a rotational contributor. Pat Connaughton comes in and he makes his mark. Sterling Brown gets some minutes and he's been really impressive over the past 2 or 3 weeks. You know, DJ Wilson is healthy and gets an opportunity and immediately makes the most of it. And you just kind of go up and down the roster, and they've been getting contributions. John Henson, before he got traded, was looking like a totally different player, and really changing the look of their offense with his ability to shoot the three and do it well. You know, Thon Maker has had his moments. Just everybody is pitching in, and that's both a credit to the players for putting in the work and developing their games, and also for Mike Budenholzer and his staff for kind of getting them into the right spots and getting them to believe in what they're doing and what he wants them to do, and then going out there and doing it. I think if there's something that I'd be concerned about, it's that the Bucks are only 7-6 on the road. You know, and that's coming off of 2 road wins against Cleveland and Detroit. So, you know, less than a week ago, you know, they were 5-6 in road games. And if you look at, you know, some of the elite teams in the league, you're going to find generally better road records. I mean, you know, Toronto obviously is the cream of the NBA right now, and they're 12-5 on the road. Indiana's 9-6. So those are two Eastern Conference teams that are in the top three that are up there. I mean, I guess you don't need to have a great record on the road. I mean, you want to be over 500, hopefully a few games above 500 instead of just hovering around there. But if you know, we saw last year where the Bucks didn't have home court, and that's what cost them the playoffs. This year, they're on pace to have home court, and sure, if you could just win the home games, that'll be enough when you have home court. But figuring out how to just kind of handle those road games to maintain leads. You know, there have been a bunch of games this year where they've had big second half leads, especially on the road, and those games haven't always panned out. So kind of just figuring that out and putting it all together. And just also, like, it is concerning to an extent that they could peak too early. I mean, they're playing really well. They have the highest point differential in the NBA. As entering yesterday's game, and probably still, they have the number one net rating in the NBA. So they're doing, you know, a lot of really good things on both ends of the court. They've been highly efficient. But you just kind of wonder, can that last? Like, you know, obviously scheme-wise and player-wise, talent-wise, they have all the pieces to make it last. But, you know, you actually have to play the games. You have to go through the rest of the season and prove that you can do it, not just for 30 games, but for all 82 and into the playoffs. So, you know, that'll be the challenge for them to sustain and, you know, even get better as they go throughout the season.
He is Matt Velasquez. You can read all of his content at jsonline.com, all of his Buck stories and notes packages. And also, hey, if you want to check out what it looks like inside the Bradley Center that's getting demolished from the inside out, there's some great photos up at jsonline.com inside the demolition process, that building now known as the neighbor to Pfizer Forum, home of the Milwaukee Bucks and Marquette Golden Eagles, among others, it's on its way out. It's kind of fun to look at. Matt, again, we're not going to join you next week because of the holiday. You have a Merry Christmas. I imagine you'll be spending it at Madison Square Garden, which is kind of a drag, but not first time the Bucks can say that they're playing at Christmas, so that's kind of a cool thing.
Yeah, no, it'll be fun, and Merry Christmas to you, and happy holidays to all our listeners, and look forward to having some more fun talking about the Bucks in the new year.
All right, we will join you next week. Find us on Apple Podcasts. Leave us a rating and review. You can also find me on Twitter at JRRadcliffe. That's Radcliffe with an E on the end. Or find him, Matt Velasquez, at Matt_Velasquez, VelazQuez. We're on Spotify and Stitcher as well. Thanks for joining us. We'll catch you again in 2019.